And in Life and Times, we're remembering the renowned American sex therapist Shirley Zussman, who kept on working to the grand old age of 105. Most of us, I think, couldn't think of anything worse, but nevertheless, she was 107 when she finally passed away last month. Oprah Winfrey famously asked her, "What's going on in American bedrooms?" which was quite a bold question for TV back in the 90s. This is her speaking to Times magazine on her 100th birthday.
Sexual pleasure is only one part of what men and women want from each other. They want intimacy, they want closeness, they want understanding, they want comfort, they want fun, and they want somebody who really cares about them beyond going to bed with them. And I think people are always seeking that in every generation. I was invited with my husband to a lecture in New Jersey in 1966. What I saw was a couple who were saying that people had problems in an area of their lives that was very important, and they were recognizing that it was all not just glamorous and wonderful to be sexual. One had to almost learn how to be a good partner and to enjoy the pleasure not only for yourself but for each other. And I thought, we can do that. Why can't we do that? And we applied for training with Masters and Johnson at that time.
Oh, the wisdom of maturity. Shirley Zussman speaking to Time magazine on her 100th birthday. Joining me is the specialist relationship counsellor, James Earle, and Tom Dodd, who wrote her obituary for The Times. Tom, first of all, I mean, it's a pretty fine innings, isn't it? 107. A life well lived, it sounds like, as well. I mean, she sounded amazing in that clip on her 100th.
Yeah, she was born 5 days before the outbreak of the First World War. And she was seeing patients till she was 105. She started a blog when she was in her 90s, published a book when she was 103. Just had this extreme curiosity as well. I guess the genetic good luck. Her sister lived to be 104, and her brother 96 when he died. So she lived outlived her husband by a long stretch because he died in 1990, but she carried on. Because she just loved her work, and from the point of view of her job as a sexologist, she saw so many changes in how culture views sex, expectations, gender.
Indeed,
many cultural shifts throughout her career. The job just changed so much.
The busiest century possible on that topic, I think it's fair to say. Tom, we're going to try and get you on a slightly better line, but I'm going to turn to you, James, now, because as Tom was saying, she clearly loved her job. She was still doing it at 103. Was she a workaholic or just absolutely obsessive about her subject?
I think she possibly redefines the term workaholic. I mean, what an amazing person that she can work so long and be so enthusiastic. She actually lost her partner about 40 years ago. So I think, you know, the idea that you can continue in a field that you love so much and contribute so much is remarkable.
And what is it about her and the work she did that you find so interesting?
She continued the Masters and Johnson tradition, which I may say something about later, but I mean, essentially what she was arguing was that sex should be embedded in a relationship rather than seen as a set of unique problems. And I think that approach, putting sex in context, is an enduring one and one that most sex therapists will respond to. The idea being that other needs are being met in a relationship other than sex, and sex takes its meaning from those other needs being met as well. So she was fairly critical of the whole swinging 60s idea of, you know, what she called frantic sex, simply because although that was a limited source of pleasure, it didn't really talk about the whole range of intimacies in relationships.
And I suppose also the idea that problems in sex, in a relationship, are prompted by other problems within the relationship. It's not just the sex that's the issue.
That's exactly Right, and I think up to that point, up to the, her beginning her work, it was quite common to see sex therapy as being about, common physical problems. And I think not only was that a shift talking about emotional bases of problems, but also just a general understanding that sex wasn't all about problems and correct functioning. It was about a fulfilling relationship in the round, and that's what she was really arguing for. I think, one of the characteristics of her work is it just comes across as very compassionate and warm and well-rounded, and I think that's why she's being read today.
Tom, I think her sexology career began in the 1960s. James has talked a little bit there about the idea of frantic sex. You know, it was grab it while you can in the 1960s, because suddenly there was the freedom to do so. Why was her voice an original one at that time? Or what was it that she addressed that wasn't being addressed at the time?
Well, I think, as James said, she was very compassionate, which she had a background as a social worker before she met Masters and Johnson. And then sexology was starting to grow in credibility in academic terms post-war, thanks to Alfred Kinsey, Masters and Johnson. So it was being taken more seriously as an academic subject. So it was a growing field in the US. And I think it's important to say that she was a team with her husband, Leon Zussman, who was a gynecologist. So they had offices next to each other. They kind of shared a practice where she would deal with the emotional aspect of sexual problems and he would deal with the physical aspect. So they were very much a husband and wife team. So I think that's one aspect which gave them credibility. And in her obituary in the New York Times, Dr. Ruth, the most famous American agony aunt who was influenced by Shirley Zussman, did make reference to that, the Zussmans, the husband and wife, really gave the field credibility in their work. So I think that's a big factor of her success.
Unbelievably, when she was born in 1914, the average American woman was unlikely to live for more than a couple of years after the onset of menopause. But I think Zussman had a point about positive shifts in society. Can you tell me a bit more about that, Tom?
Yeah, so in 1914, the average life expectancy for an American woman was 56.8 years. By 2019, it was 81.4. So in her lifetime, average life expectancy increased by 25 years, but as she grew older and saw that women were not taken seriously as sexual beings, after the menopause, which she thought was terribly unfair, and she felt that the culture around sex in middle age and beyond hadn't kept up with the growth in lifespans, and that was, of course, as she aged and saw friends get older so that was something that was clearly, reading her blog, very personal to her, how we don't talk much about sex once we're in our later middle age and beyond.
We're not supposed to have sex, particularly women after middle age. It's a grotesque thought, apparently. I don't know if you knew that, Tom, but I'm just filling you in, because she sounds like a woman very much after my own heart. I'm wondering, James, if there was much resistance to her ideas, and are they regarded still relevant today? Because, I mean, everything she said in that clip we played sounds incredibly modern and sensible.
I think there's two sort of forms of resistance to her ideas, perhaps. One is the general perception that sex therapy is a rather strange area of study and therapy, which has probably got its roots in religious culture and so on. I think one of the major contributions she made was to the destigmatization of that, and, as Tom said, towards the idea of female pleasure, particularly later in life. But I think another criticism possibly is just generic to the Masters and Johnson tradition, which is about the idea of sensate focus, which was the therapy they promoted. I think there's a growing school of thought. And I would sort of cite somebody like Esther Perel, who might challenge some of the assumptions of sensate focus. But I didn't really see it as a criticism of her. I just see it as a sort of extending the tradition and maybe moving away from some of the assumptions that Masters and Johnson made. And in fact, she was quite amazing in the way that she kept up with contemporary thinking, because in a very late interview, she talks about how the real problem in relationships these days is loss of desire. So it's no longer the physical problems that perhaps people were experiencing in the 60s, which, okay, are still there, but this almost cultural shift to relationships not being the basis of
Sadly, we haven't got time to go into Masters and Johnson and the history of sort of sexual experimentation and study. But I think Masters focused on techniques specific to intercourse, what goes where and what happens, etc. And if anyone wants to know more about it, you can just Google it, can't you, or go to your favourite search engine. But just finally, Tom, what were her thoughts on how modern technology affects our relationships? And very briefly, I'm afraid.
Yes, she was. She said in 2014 she was shocked at the lack of connection between people because of iPhones. There's less physical connection, less touching, less talking, less holding, less looking. And that made her worried that people were not getting enough touching and they were not feeling wanted and loved because there was a lack of physical touch in the virtual world.
Do you know what it sounds to me like? She was right about almost everything. Tom Dart and James Earl, thank you both for telling us about Shirley Zussman, who died last month aged 107. If you'd like to read more about fascinating lives covered by the Times obituary team, why don't you consider a subscription? Head to our website to find out more. And remember, your first month is on us.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
It's 2:00.